you want to hear my quitting story? Because I'm about to quit. No, oh, I'm kidding. No. I'm not quitting. I'm not going to quit. I'm here. I'm here to work. I'm here to start off and tell you right away that this is episode 21 of season 5, originally airing on March 26, 2009, because just like this episode, we are jumping right in.
Yeah, this picks up basically immediately. So we saw Michael be in New York. He gives his notice that sets off this chain of events. And Michael is retelling that chain of events to a group of people in the kitchen. And Michael's in his favorite place, the center of attention.
That is exactly where Michael loves to be, with a captive audience, and he knows it. And it's pretty funny because the staff definitely point out that they know that he knows that he has an interesting story, and he's really, really milking it for every ounce. And it seems like it's taken him like a half hour to describe himself getting into the building.
Yeah. Like, the door was broken, and then I was in the wrong building. They're like, stop, just tell us what's happening.
I had no idea when I got into that car to go to New York that I was going to be quitting. I got on the ramp, and I was like, 2 hours to go, feeling good, crank some tunes. Should have peed before I left.
Michael, get to the good part.
Okay, so, get up the building. Revolving door, broken. So I have to take the normal door.
Oh, my God.
At least he's in the building.
No. I was so nervous it was the wrong building. I had walked into the wrong building.
Because everyone loves a good quitting story, and that's what Michael's trying to tell. But to me, it stood out. I was listening, and everyone's response to Michael quitting, they were much more vindictive styles of wanting to hear, like, oh, did you tell him off, or did you do this, or did you wreck this? Like, they were quitting to a lot of the staff is kind of like an explosion of fury, like an explosion of fury and frustrations that you would throw out at an employer, and then like quit in this big ball of flames. But Michael was just like, no, I didn't.
I looked at Wallace and I said, I quit. And as I turned to leave, I looked back and I said, you have no idea how high I can fly.
You didn't tell him how sick of him you were?
Why would I do that?
Well, wouldn't it feel good to tell him that he's incompetent? Or
that he's wasted 15 years of your life?
Maybe spit in his face?
You guys have thought about this a lot more than I have. I just winged it.
And I do like that he re-mentioned that he did say, you don't know how high I could fly, because I feel like he really had that line.
Uh-huh. Really proud of that. I thought a lot about this, and I think what's going on is they are projecting how they would quit to Michael, that they would tell Michael off if they quit. Mm-hmm. And Oscar talks about that in his confessional, and he says, you know, I dream of having an awesome quitting story one day. And so I think they're sort of tipping their hand at how they would quit if, you know, it was their day and not Michael's.
So Michael, we see him in the middle of his 2 weeks notice after this open, because I guess it is a little bit cold. I mean, maybe it's like lukewarm. It's a lukewarm open. No, tepid open. Because it was a week earlier that we see him telling the quitting story. And then we fast forward a week, and now Michael is 1 week away from his 2 week notice and actually leaving. And he is just not caring. He's at peak Michael. And as Jim states in the very beginning, there's a big difference, it turns out, from mm-hmm. Michael caring and Michael not caring.
Yeah, he's walking around, he's having a drink, Scotch and Splenda. Which, I mean, I don't drink, but that sounds terrible.
Tastes like Splenda, gets drunk like scotch.
Didn't he invent that drink in a previous episode?
I think so.
I believe in cocktails he invented that drink.
Yes. So. Yeah.
Oh, and he also asked for Splenda in the scotch that David Wallace served at his dinner party.
Good call. That's a good reach. Yeah. It's his go-to, you know? In this sort of part of the episode, we come to find out a couple of things. One, Michael has not done anything about future employment because, in his words, he believes that there are headhunters out there who know he's available and they will reach out to him and hire him. Now, this is shot in 2009, not a great time in the economy, which is referenced a bunch in this episode. Like, really? Like, the market's really tough right now and people are worried about him, right? Andy, Phyllis, others, they all like, hey, Jim, like, you need to get this together, right? Pam tries to talk to him about it, and it takes a little while, but it slowly sinks in to Michael's head that he's got a problem. In fact, it doesn't really sink in until someone comes in to interview for his job. Michael doesn't tell him that he's the outgoing regional manager that's talking there on the couch by reception. And the guy's like, yeah, you know, there's not a lot of people hiring right now, so I got to be psyched to get this job. And I think that's when it kind of sinks in that Michael needs a plan and only has a few days to come up with something.
Yeah, he kind of essentially goes into panic mode after that. And I do like that his first list is Prince Family Paper and then other company.
Yeah.
Like, that's all he had. His ideas go that far. He calls up Prince Family Paper, and we find out in this, like, the saddest of sad voicemails that they're closed. And we know that that is a direct result of probably Michael mm-hmm. and Dwight's reconnaissance mission from a previous episode.
Da-da.
Hi, you've reached Prince Paper. We are sad to inform you that after 40 years of serving the community, we are no longer in business. Thank you for your support, and may God bless you.
Bye.
And now there's nothing there for even Michael.
He's in trouble, right?
Yeah, because we go from a Michael that's very high on possibilities as he's, like, goofing off all over the office. Like you said, thinking headhunters are just going to come find him, probably because he has had this one job and that's it, like, his entire career. And now he's in panic mode. And his panic mode, it doesn't last very long. I like that we don't see, like, a wallowing Michael for very long. It quickly turns from Michael being like, I don't know what to do, I'm gonna try and, like, get a job at this one other paper company that I know about. And then he comes up with the idea, I'm gonna start my own company. And he spends the rest of the episode essentially trying to recruit for that and prepare in, I guess, the very base way to start this company himself.
Yeah, the Michael Scott Paper Company. It's a name.
I like that he has the name right away. I like how he reveals it to Jim.
Oh, close your eyes.
I prefer not to.
Just close your eyes. I'm going to start my own paper company.
You're starting your own paper company?
Yeah.
Why?
Can you believe? Because I know paper. I know everything there's to know about paper.
Do you know that the industry's in decline?
Yeah. Oh, God, I practically invented decline.
Michael tries to recruit everyone, and each person that he talks to essentially tells him that this is a terrible idea.
Jim declines immediately, but in a caring way, not just, hey, I'm not doing this, but like, hey, I want you to have a job, I want you to have a salary, I want you to be at a company that can do salaries. This is not a good idea that you should do.
Michael, you see him getting slightly discouraged as he's moving around the office and asking people. But, I mean, he still has this idea because I feel like it's his only lifeline right now. And he has to stay positive about it or he's going to lose it. And he even goes to the point of he's trying to make his own letterhead. He is stealing various little items from around the office. Although he didn't steal the big client list that Charles hands him right in the beginning. He crumples that up. So he doesn't have access to that. But I admire Michael in this situation where everyone shoots him down, but yet he comes back with, I know paper. He's confident in himself. He states that he knows the business. He's gotten most of these clients himself in the first place. And then he has this really upsetting quote that is another one of those little glimpses into Michael's past where he says,
I had a great time at prom, and no one said yes to that either.
Oh, like, Michael. Oh.
But he perseveres. He still stays focused. It's quite admirable, really.
Yeah, he's going to do this. He tells Pam that he's had this dream since lunch and he's not going to give up on it now.
I do like how Pam tries to help him with the letterhead.
You can scan it and then you can upload the image and then you can copy a new image.
Could I take a piece of paper and just tape it with transparent tape?
Yeah.
Like we used to do in the 80s.
She went to graphic design school. She knows what to do.
It's true. Well, and she's been busy this episode also before we get into Michael essentially getting dragged out of the office. She has gotten put in charge or taken upon herself to learn how to set up the new copier. As we know, there was a very, very,
very
old
bad
copier in the office. Very, very bad copier. And they chose to get chairs instead of copiers, instead of a new copier. And now there is a new copier there. And it is Pam's job to set it up.
Yeah, it's one of these machines. You know, I've worked in offices with these where it can do everything, right? It's super complicated. The three-ring binder it comes in is really thick. So she's like, you know, this is going to take some time. Kevin wanders over. He's like, can I use it? And she says, you know, no, it could be a while. I got a lot of stuff to do. And he leaves upset. And then one of my favorite little scenes in this episode is Dwight coming over and offering to help. And I think he's being like pretty nice about it. He said, hey, you know, I know German. Maybe I could read the German and it would help. And he makes a sort of awful comment about World War II. And then he tries to read it and he's like naming things like, you know, a ceremonial knife and all of these things. And then it just cuts to a talking head where he says,
my German is pre-industrial and mostly religious.
Not helpful, Dwight.
It is a little indication of like his relationship with Pam, which has warmed through the years. And I like that low camera angle that they have because Pam is on the floor reading the instructions, trying to figure out this machine. And we just see Dwight's shoes. He wears those like black grandpa shoes. Like, I don't know, you know, everyone knows what they are. They're so iconic, but I love that they're Dwight's shoes. And he just walks up and stands there for a little bit and then squats down next to her and tries to help. So I like that interesting low camera angle that they got going there. But Pam has worked really hard to get this copier working. And she even tries to have like a little working ceremony when she thinks she's gotten it right. And everyone, you know, kind of pays attention.
Little Miss Thing wants attention.
Meredith.
And then it doesn't work. Yeah. And she has to go back into the binder to troubleshoot again.
While she's troubleshooting, Kevin wanders over and tries to use it. She's like, no, it's not ready.
It's not ready, Kevin.
She's getting flustered. You know, she wants to get this done. She has a comment about she's not going to be defeated by the copier like she was a wireless router.
I'm at a crucial point where I have sunk 4 hours into that copier. And I'm not going to let it beat me like that wireless router did.
But the whole thing with the copier kind of spurs something in Pam when she realizes that she has conquered the copier and that she can do all of the crazy things it can do. She can collate, she can two-tone, she can laminate, bind, and all the things that the copier does. And I gotta say, the stationary nerd in me was a little bit excited about how much stuff this copier could do. I was like, ooh, I want to know how to do all that. That sounds awesome. But with her, she does take this moment, and again, it's in that silent acting that we see so much in this show that is just really telling about the internal mental workings of our characters, that this is like a thing she spent all day doing. And I just feel like she just came to terms with, I'm not really fulfilled by this, or I don't feel like that my knowledge of knowing all of this means anything, and yet I just spent all of my day doing it. And she, it kind of makes her a little sad. I think she's really realizing that like she's been a receptionist for a long time and she probably wants a lot more for herself, which we've seen in previous episodes. And this is one of those moments where it's like, wow, I'm pretty invested in this job right now.
Yeah, there's a much earlier episode, it may even be like season two, where Jim and Pam sort of get into a little bit of an argument. And I think it's maybe when Roy says she can't go to art school. And it's like, do you want to be, you know, stay here and be a receptionist your whole life? And she sort of flies off at the handle. And in watching this episode, I thought about that earlier conversation that Pam has come so far as a character, right? She's moved out of that bad relationship. She's done the New York thing and she came back.
She lived on her own for a while.
She came back on her own terms. She's her own person now. And I think she realizes that this job doesn't really jive with the rest of the progress that she's made, that she's moved forward in so many ways, but she's still stuck here. She spent all day doing this. No one really appreciates it when it's done. I think that's part of it too, that, you know, they just start using it. And I think as they start to use it, she kind of gets shuffled off to the side a little bit even. And she's clearly just like really struggling with this. And it is perfect timing to make a change, as we're going to see, a change that she will ultimately decide to make.
So that change comes when Charles discovers that Michael is trying to make his own company letterhead, and he has Hank up to escort Michael out of the building.
I love that detail.
Michael acts like Hank is his loyal bodyguard when really he is just there for the building, and there's no loyalty there whatsoever.
You really think Hank is going to be loyal to you? Hank, please escort Charles from the building.
Come on, man. Let's go.
Michael is asked to leave. He does leave, but then he comes crawling back. There is like a lot of back and forth between Michael trying to get back into the building for various reasons. I think he is panicking that he's essentially getting kicked out of his home. If he thinks of this as his family, he's getting pulled from his home, and he really didn't think this through.
Yeah, he like crawls back in. So out of sight of Charles, who's in the conference room working. He goes over to accounting and tries to take something out of a cabinet, and Angela like shuts it with her. I know it's like with her heel on the cabinet, like asserting complete dominance over Michael. Like, you're not getting in here. Like, this is completely uncool. And it is completely uncool. It's completely inappropriate for Michael or for any employee to come back and do this sort of thing. And so he kind of gives up on that. And then he makes a plea. Like, hey, you know, I didn't get to ask everybody before I left. I want to ask everybody. I want everybody to come with me. You know, who's with me? And he's on the floor, and there's this funny thing where people are looking down at him. He says, no, look up, look up. And so everyone looks towards the ceiling. He says, no, level height. Just look straight ahead.
Listen. Okay. We don't have much time. Just act normal. Don't look at me. People, stop. Don't look down. He's going to see me. Not all the way up. Keep him at a normal height. Okay, hey, this is not Michael Scott talking right now. This is your future. Hello, I am your future. You are older and you are very happy now because you went with Michael Scott.
Very creepy voice.
But he gets, you know, found out again by Charles as he tries to pull Phyllis from her chair. And again, we have that other like super low camera angle. So we're like really seeing Michael on the floor. A lot of people are on the floor in this episode.
Yeah, yeah, they are.
Right. And so he gets found out again, and he stands up and he's about to leave. And kind of I thought in a very Jerry Maguire moment, Pam stands up after Michael has left for like the fifth time. Now she stands up and just says, oh, no. And Jim's face when she says that, and he looks up and she's getting up and she's like, I'm going to go follow him. And she goes out to the parking lot to go after Michael. It's so Jerry Maguire. Have you seen Jerry Maguire?
No. I have not.
No. All right. Okay. Your homework is to watch that movie. Just summer night fun. Just
okay.
Well, you and Mary, you go sit down and you watch Jerry Maguire. You just have to. Because, and then you'll be like, it's the office scene. It's totally the scene from The Office.
I do want to back up a second, because when Charles comes out and he's trying to pull Phyllis away, it's like, what's his plan? They're on the second floor. You like pull her down the stairs? Lots of questions. And Charles is angry, right? He like, the door flies open and he takes his glasses off. You know, Michael's like, I think Hank should be here. He's like, no, I don't need Hank. And like, they're going to fight. And like, Charles is a big dude, right? Like, he would own Michael. And he takes a step towards Michael. He's like, oh, okay. You know, and like drops the stuff he's holding and runs out the door. And then Charles comes back and slams the door shut to the conference room, which is not something we see very much in The Office. I mean, we see people slam doors on occasion, but it really comes across.
Or punch walls.
Yeah, punch walls. maybe you're in the ceiling. But it's very clear that he is just done. He is super angry. And I think Michael finally gets the message that he is not welcome at Dunder Mifflin.
Yeah. Yeah. Charles is definitely a force to be reckoned with. And he scares Michael away. He scares him good. But yeah, Pam going out into the parking lot is such a great moment, because we see Michael now. He was just like literally chased out of the office by like a force of a man who was coming at him.
I'd run. I mean, who am I kidding?
Oh, definitely run. Well, maybe towards Charles.
Okay, Kelly.
I'd be with Angela and Kelly.
I have a section of my notes called Hot Charles, talking about how Angela and Kelly just flirt with him the whole time.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Okay, because I definitely want to talk about Hot Charles.
Who doesn't?
Right? I mean, you have a whole section. Mm-hmm. You obviously do. So when she goes out into the parking lot and he's just kind of like walking away, that like defeated Michael. And she comes out and says, I'm going with you. And I like that she's like, not as a receptionist. And Michael goes, oh, right. Executive assistant. Mm-hmm. Like he's trying to be all PC. And I like that Pam stands up for herself. This is the indication of Pam wants more for herself. Yeah. And she knows that she is worth more and capable of more. And so she says, no, as a salesman, like I want to do sales. And this is a chance for me to change everything. Jim follows her out. And at first it's more of like, are you nuts? Mm-hmm. Like this, is this something that you, what are you doing? But then he supports her because she's like, oh no, all my stuff is inside. And Michael asks, are they looking? And we see everyone looking.
Including Charles. He like looks over Andy's shoulder out the window to see what's going on.
I mean, you got to look, right? There's a whole thing mm-hmm. going on in the parking lot. And I love that Jim has that support of, I'll bring your stuff home.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't, you know, start tearing into like, how could you, or berating her anyway, or making her feel stupid. He was just like, okay, this is what you're doing, mm-hmm. huh? I will help you save face and I will bring your stuff home. And I think that that is a really wonderful supportive view of their relationship.
I think it is too. What I thought about was, you know, Halpert's and money problems are like on again, off again issue. And I don't think we'd gotten into that much, but like she's going to go to a job without any pay, right? I mean, it's Oscar talked about that to Michael outside of like, you're not going to get a salary for years. Like you need to have money to coast on and to live on, and you got to figure out funding and all those things. And Michael hasn't done any of that, of course. And we see that unfold over the next few episodes. But yeah, Jim is super supportive of her. And even though he knows it's a bad idea, because he told Michael it's a bad idea, he is willing to get behind her decision. And I think he totally understands where she's coming from. He understands probably better than anyone else besides her, all of that journey she's been on that we just spoke about. And so he's willing to, you know, step aside, put his worries and concerns about this aside, and let her take a run at this. I think it's fantastic.
Michael, it's not how you leave an office.
Jim,
it's how you...
Jim, we're having a company meeting here.
I will bring all your stuff home.
Okay. All right. I'll see you later.
Bye. See you later.
So we don't end here, which would have been a great ending. Instead, we end back in the conference room with Charles running a meeting. And we have Kelly and Angela right up front mm-hmm. of the meeting, which I guess we could talk hot Charles right now, right? Let's do it.
He understands the effect he has on women.
I am aware of the effect I have on women.
Kelly has a moment where she is trying to chat up Charles and just anything for his attention whatsoever. It seems like she is managing to find her way into the conference room where he's set up an mm-hmm. office. And followed up, Angela is also right there. She wants to talk about some accounting conference that she's going to go to. And the two women, they totally battle it out for Charles' attention. Yeah. And he doesn't seem interested at all in either of them.
No. Well, Kelly refers to herself and her sisters as the Kardashians. And after Angela leaves...
I mean, Kelly's looking very cute in this episode, I gotta say. Like, she is. She's all dressed up.
As Angela leaves, she says, oh, she's such a special lady. She's turning 50 this year.
Kelly's devious. She plays dirty a little bit.
She does. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the hot Charles thing is funny. And it's just like this another layer to him that we don't know much about this guy. We know that he's pretty straight-laced and you know, rightfully gets upset about Michael, and he's like not willing to play games with Kelly and Angela, which I think is good too.
Yep, earlier.
Okay, we're in the middle of saying Angela's lunches.
Actually, you know, it was so much fun last year. There was a Sunday bar. I mean, I didn't have any, you know, to stay trim.
Did Michael just let anybody in his office?
Yes.
Yeah, he loved it. Loved facilitate
communication.
Yeah.
Like, come in.
I also want to talk about Charles in terms of his management. He is not, clearly he does not have a great take on the staff at Dunder Mifflin Scranton, right? I also have questions that he has Jane's old job, but we only see him at Scranton. Like, he has other places he's apparently in charge of, but we don't see him there. Anyways, the very end of that meeting, you spoke about Kelly and Angela being at the very front. Charles is going to make some changes. So Pam's gone. Until we get a new receptionist, we're going to put Kevin at reception. I don't think Kevin knows how the phones work, but
I don't think Kevin can spell reception.
But to top that, he says Stanley. There's a lot of goofing off in here. You are my productivity czar. I want you to get on this. I want people to be efficient and productive. Stanley, you're the man for this.
So, we had a personnel change today. Shouldn't affect our day-to-day, but until we get a new receptionist, I want Kevin on the phones.
Phones.
Also, there's been way too much wasting time. So, Stanley.
Yes?
Yeah, I want you on top of that, okay? I want you to be my productivity czar.
And he says it as Stanley's doing a crossword puzzle in the meeting.
I get this. I think they're trying to get the point across that he's not real tuned in with what's going on, but I almost don't like this. I like to think that Charles is, while the bad guy in Michael's eyes, was a good hire on David Wallace's part, but this is a weird move.
Yeah, it seems like, though, he is a focused, like, I need this paperwork, I need this done, I need this done. Like, he, but yet he has no, he's not spending any opportunity to get to know anybody. And I think that maybe that's showing, like, Michael spends all of his time getting to know everyone. Just like we see when the two women are in Charles's, you know, fake office, and he asks them, you know, does Michael just let anybody into his office? And they're like, oh yeah, he loves for us to come in and talk, and it's no problem. This is like the exact opposite of Michael's strategy, right? Like, so Michael talks to everybody. Charles talks to nobody. So we're seeing that Charles doesn't have the, like, I know everything about my workers attitude of management at all. And that, when you see the two extremes, you see how they both can fail. And I think that that's what they're trying to showcase a little bit. Because, you know, Charles, even though he's probably going to be super efficient and a really good manager when it comes to getting things done and moving things along, he's never really going to have a grasp on what the staff is about. Right? That's what I'm seeing anyway.
Yeah, that's a good insight. I think that's totally right.
One of the things I do want to point out before we completely end is I love the copier destroying montage that we get in the middle when Pam is discussing about fixing up the brand new copier because the old one was so trashed. We see Kevin like pouring coffee mm-hmm. all over it. We do have a bandit appearance. Yeah. We see Bandit again chewing on the wires.
Chewing on the power cord. Bandit! Bandit just wants to end it.
Yeah. Have you seen Christmas Vacation?
Yes, once.
Okay. Okay. All right. At least you've seen that. That's good. There's a cat that chews on a wire and disintegrates itself. Oh, no. So there we go. But I didn't catch. Did you catch if it's the white-footed bandit or the non-white-footed bandit?
I didn't.
Bandit?
It went by really quick. I assume it's the current bandit.
Yeah, because, I mean, that is the bandit scandal, right? Like, who's the real bandit? It's no way to know. Yeah, so here we have it. We have Charles is now essentially like taking over Michael's position until he finds an outside hire.
For regional manager, I've decided to go with an outside hire for obvious reasons.
And again, that's like another thing. Like if he paid attention or got to know the staff a little bit better, he would realize that like Jim is kind of on it,
yeah.
right? But instead he keeps misinterpreting everything that goes on with Jim because he's not interested in really finding anything out about anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he and Jim just are out on the wrong foot. That continues to be an issue. And so Jim never had a chance to do that. And that's, again, going to the point that maybe Charles is a first impressions guy. And that first impression is what sticks. The first impression with Michael was the party. First impression with Jim was the petting zoo that pets you back. You know, like these things set these guys off on a bad foot and they never get a chance to recover.
Yeah. So Michael is officially out. He is off to start the Michael Scott Paper Company with Pam, and the office is left with some personnel changes and some new positions being filled by the people in the office to pick up the slack of the two that have left. I think this is a big transition period we are in right now, and we're still in season five. Season five is never ending. It's just never ending.
It is long.
It is the longest season. How many more episodes do we have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 more episodes.
Yeah. It's a lot of TV in season five.
There is a lot of TV in season five, but it's really very bingeable. Like these episodes go by quickly for me.
Oh yeah. All the Michael Scott's Paper Company stuff. blends together in my mind. In fact, there were stuff in this episode that I thought wasn't till later and vice versa. So it's really easy just to blast through these.
So we will be back in 2 weeks talking about the next episode, Dream Team, as we continue the Michael Scott Paper Company saga.
Oh, boy.
And I know, here we go. We're getting on this crazy roller coaster. For me, it seems like this point in the show, it's almost like you get a little bit worried, like, oh, no, are they jumping the shark already? You know, like, is this when we're going off the rails? Because now Michael's leaving the office. Like, what's happening? It's not just about bringing new people in. We're actually taking, you know, the standard people out, and especially Pam. And we're so used to seeing the film crew, you know, follow them around in the office. And that can't happen anymore. Oh, I do have one quick question before we completely say goodbye. How do you think Charles feels about the camera crew?
I think he finds it really annoying.
Yeah, same. I do too. He tolerates it because it seemed like he has to, and he wants to come across as like not a terrible person, but it's not an ideal situation for him. So we will be back talking about Dream Team, and I don't know, we're the Dream Team. I think so, right?
Yes, we are. Wait, which one of us is Ryan?
Stanley.
Can't you see I'm urinating?
Listen, Stanley, you don't need to answer me now.
No.
Just, I want you to think about it. I am starting my own company.
No.
Okay, you're not letting me finish, and you just lost out on $1 million.
No, I didn't.